That's EEECS. It stands for Electronics, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science. My name is TJ Cosgrove. I'm the Technology and Innovation Officer for the School of Electronics, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science at Queen's University Belfast. Our passionate staff and incredible students are at the forefront of 21st century technology, working in areas like artificial intelligence, data analytics, virtual reality, robotics, cybersecurity, smart grids, and cloud edge computing. But what do these technologies actually do? How do they work? And what do they mean for our future? We break down the complex topics and explain the big ideas with our experts, researchers, staff, and students. This is the EEECS podcast. So today I have Mr. Chris Linton on the show with me. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for coming along today.
Hi, TJ. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Chris, can you tell me a little bit about your background and why you're on the show today?
I've been in information security for 13, 14 years, but I've been tinkering around in the subject for many years longer than that. But professionally, I've worked in public sector and government departments and agencies doing InfoSec type stuff, the really boring stuff like risk assessments and IT policies and investigating incidents, all that sort of stuff. Now in Queen's about 6 years, and I mean, it's a very challenging place to do information security, very different than public sector government type departments. It's a much more open and sharing place. It's really, you know, the university is about giving out information and sharing it and explaining
kind of what it's for.
Yes. So it's getting that balance between security and openness, you know, the balance to allow the sharing and also to protect the users and the systems. I have to say the balance is very much in favor of sharing, which is absolutely the right way to go. So that's really the challenge for us in the InfoSec area.
Yes, sharing but safe.
Yes. Open and secure, I think, is one of the buzzwords within university and academia, IT security. So my role is really the bigger picture. You know, it's not just about technology. It's about, you know, all the firewalls, the VPNs and the antivirus and all that clever technical things. It's also about the users. And in fact, I'd say the users are probably a lot more important than the technology at the end of the day.
Yeah, there's no user guide for people most of the time.
No, and everybody's different.
And again, it's something that we're all experiencing at the minute with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of people in Queen's are working from home, and so that's changed how we work. More people are working from home, and they're using different services. They're using services for the first time, and our processes are all changing. What kind of impact does that have on information services within a university when everything's kind of, over the course of a week, flipped on its head?
Part of the challenge there was the pace of change. But in all honesty, you know, university, it wasn't that big an impact on the university because we've been, as we've already discussed, you know, we've been open and allowing people to connect remotely for many, many years. So we know the technology is really there. We know how to secure it. We have, it was really just about the capacity, the sudden extreme number of connections, remote connections that we needed to do. I mean, literally thousands of users needing a secure remote connection and also a connection that worked, which is probably even more important than anything else. So, you know, there was for the likes of me, it was about, because we did bring in some new technology. Whilst we had remote access, we didn't have enough of it. And some of the remote access we had was quite expensive and not very suitable for particularly for staff users. I'm talking here about our off-campus system. So I had to bring in a new VPN, and part of my role was testing that before we let the users onto it to make sure that it was as secure as we could possibly make it.
I mean
the other thing there about the impact is you know, because there's so many people are remote now, we've become quite paranoid about who's connecting to us, and we're monitoring more and we're checking more. And you know, I think it's worth saying to people that if we see something suspicious or something out of the ordinary that we're not happy with, we will disconnect people. So if people do get connected, don't panic. Just call the service desk and reassure us that you are one of our genuine users.
Yes. And it is a time of change. So I think that's going to be one of the teething problems, is trying to work out
just all the different use cases people will be having. You know, it's not necessarily one size fits all for users, even within a university, never mind any other organization.
It's worse for us because we have people all over the world, because yes, we have associate members and associate users that are not necessarily based on these islands. So yes, we can, you know, it's not uncommon for people to be connecting from Los Angeles and China and all over the world.
Yeah. So it's not just a campus sort of location issue. It's global.
Definitely.
So with all these people working from home, I've been working from home for several weeks now. Just means you boot up a laptop on the sofa and it's business as usual, surely. Is that the case?
I hope it is business as usual, but it's definitely not security as usual. You know, the security issue is a whole other ballgame, both for us in central IT and for the users themselves. Really, whilst the underlying technology is protecting and covering most of the issues, there's, you know, it's a totally different environment, as you know yourself, in the office. You know, a lot more distractions out there, a lot more distractions at home than in the office. You know, things like, I'm just thinking in my own environment, you know, the door knocks and there's a parcel waiting for me and I'm in the middle of something, and or maybe it's sometimes just maybe a bit of DIY going on and you're slightly distracted, or even the worst, the kids playing football or just generally messing around in the background. So really, it's the sort of things that, you know, what I'm saying is we may not be paying full attention all the time and we may be distracted. And then if something happens, we leave the device unattended, you know, we really have lost control there, certainly compared with being in an office, either on your own or with one or two colleagues that you know and know how they behave. But
yeah, that mindset creep can sort of creep in whenever you're at home. So it feels like a personal situation rather than a work one. And so it can, you know, whereas if you're in the office, you may have a more focused mindset. It can start to creep in if you're just sitting on the sofa that, I'll just set this down. I'll go off and do such and such. Whenever you probably wouldn't do that if you were sat in the office condition.
Absolutely. Certainly for me, and I think for an awful lot of people, yes, that would be the case. I mean, one other thing there on that, and I don't want to sound too sort of bossy or draconian or anything, but you know, when we are working for the university on IT systems, even our own devices, believe it or not, we're bound by the rules of acceptable use. So those are, most people probably are not really aware of them, but they are in place and you can access them on our website. I mean, the easiest way to do that is just to search in the website for data security and you will find pages and pages of all the rules and regulations. I mean, they're there. They're not there to make life difficult for people. They're there to protect the us as users as much as the university itself.
Yeah, it's a framework that we need to follow rather than rules that are going to be hit over the head with.
Absolutely, yes.
And so working from home, obviously there's a whole suite of threats and issues that come up that you may not sort of encounter in the office, because the office has, you know, the university campus would have firewalls and all this kind of physical protection set up as well. You can control a lot more of the variables. When you're working from home, not necessarily the same situation. So what kind of threats will come up with people working from home?
Well, I think the main threat really, and I've kind of alluded to it earlier on about, you know, us losing attention because all those things distract us. But the most obvious one is your device, mm-hmm. whether it's your own device or the university's device. I mean, outside of the secure environment of the office, one of the big things is the theft possibility. Because it's just simply not as secure.
Yeah.
So, you know, you need to be sure if it's a university device that it's encrypted, is the first and most important thing. And probably even if it's your own device and you don't want to encrypt it, don't save any university data on it. So therefore there's nothing, if it does go away, well, there's nothing there of any concern.
Yeah.
For the university or indeed for yourself if you're doing important research. And then the other thing about the device is logging off from it. You can't just, like in your office, jump up and walk away and lock the door behind you and it's secure. You know, if you leave it logged in, somebody else in the in the house might just do something silly, accidentally even, for no other reason. So, you know, you want to log off and make sure that nobody else can get onto it.
And have that divide, I guess, between work devices, if you can, and personal devices, and also just work time and personal time, which is important for working from home anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure most people, I mean, I have to say, I'm quite lucky that we have a wee study that we can go into and be away from the rest of the house. But, you know, that may not be available for everybody, unfortunately. But other things, you know, to keep an eye on your device are that it's updating properly, the operating system and the antivirus in particular. You know, when you're out of the office, the central management, you mentioned it yourself, TJ, you know, you're not protected by all the technology that's sitting there monitoring your device and protecting it that way. So you need to periodically open your antivirus, make sure that it's got the latest signatures on it, and even the operating system, just make sure that it's updating on a regular basis.
Yeah.
We are hopefully going, if this continues on and an extended period, we are hopefully going to be able to do more remote management, but not at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, the other less obvious threat when working from home is the online threat from the bad guys. I mean, it's not that different. It's not really a lot different than being in the office. But again, it's, you know, it's about the extra distractions of working from home. And
the context is different. So it's easier to kind of be relaxed about it, where you wouldn't necessarily feel the same way in the office.
The social engineering social engineering, I guess these guys know perfectly well that a lot of us are working from home. That's another angle on the social engineering. But just to sort of, define what I mean by the bad guys, it's the sort of people out there who are looking to compromise your account. They're looking to destroy your data, steal it. They're even looking to defraud you and get money from you. Even in some occasions, we've seen them trying to humiliate people by blackmail and all that sort of really nasty stuff, just that will make your life a misery if you're ever unfortunate enough to come across it. I mean, my experience on that is that we see this on a regular basis and have seen it certainly ever since I came to Queen's, a continuous stream of attacks of various different types, mostly by email, which we'll touch on the whole phishing thing. We'll touch on that later on, but that's really where it's come from. And we've seen, you know, examples are data destroyed with ransomware. An academic writing a book actually had lost all the data, but fortunately this individual had sent the proof to the publishers the day before the incident happened. So it was one of those unbelievably lucky instances. But other than that, the data was completely gone. And then, I mean, the classic old ones like money being taken from bank accounts through a combination of phone calls and emails and remote access and just catastrophes where people have lost thousands and thousands of pounds by that kind of scam. And then even payments being diverted to fraudsters. We have had quite a lot of attempts at Queen's. But the bad guys attempting to get people's pay diverted. Thankfully, our finance people are very alert to these kind of things. Yeah. So far, fingers crossed, we haven't had any serious incidents there. And then the other thing, again, back to the open and free attitude of the university, you know, we publish an awful lot of stuff on our website. So it's not very hard for the bad guys to work out who we are and to start to do targeted attacks. And
yeah, it's the other side. It's a double-edged sword in that we share an awful lot, but in doing that, it's a lot of information out there publicly for people to see and understand and then potentially use against you, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. There's an industry out there of people gathering intelligence, and it never ceases to amaze me how targeted it can be and how easy it is for them to work out an awful lot of things about how we actually operate.
Yeah. And so something we touched on earlier was phishing, not F-I-S-H, but P-H-I-S-H.
Indeed. That is, in my opinion, the biggest threat to the university, and because it's so under the radar and undercover that quite often takes people by surprise.
Mm.
But really, I mean, phishing is just it's just an attempt to get your login details by making you think an email is genuine. You know,
yes.
Whether it's from your employer, your bank, the tax man. An awful lot of them are very, very obvious, especially if you get an email from a parcel delivery company and you haven't ordered a parcel. It's obvious it doesn't take you very long to work that one out. But when it's coming from your employer, or it looks like it's coming from your employer, it's maybe sometimes a bit harder to realize that it's not genuine. And the way they operate, the way the Fisher people operate, is they're hoping that we're not paying attention and that we'll respond quickly without thinking too much about it. And that's why they usually have some sort of sense of urgency within it, or they make you feel you have to do something, otherwise you'll lose something like your email account, or they'll say to you, your account will be disabled if you do not respond within 24 hours, that kind of thing. And then it's what we're saying about, you know, possibly we're distracted. And, you know, quite often in the past, they've sent them out of business hours late at night or early in the morning. And, you know, they know well that people are tired, especially in the evening, might have had a glass of wine. Something's distracted you. And that's when they know that people are less likely to really take a long, hard look at what's been sent to them.
Yeah. So you're saying it's safest and most secure for me not to answer emails after 5 p.m.?
Yes. I mean, I come very much from the older background of, you know, the work and life balance, where work and the rest of your life are very separate. So I really do try not to. That's just a personal thing. I can understand.
Oh, I do as well. It's tough though sometimes when you're just, I'll just check. I'll just quickly make sure there's nothing for tomorrow. And then you end up down the rabbit hole. But there we go. I'll keep that one for my line manager, let him know. That's why I'm not answering after 5.
Well, if there's something going down in my job, there may well be some incident that's ongoing. So,
absolutely. Yeah,
but I think that's different. It's just that, you know, it's routinely, I like to separate as much as possible my work from the rest of my personal life. And I think that that's probably a good thing when dealing with these unsolicited, unexpected kind of emails that pop up in your inbox.
More important now as well, given that we're all at home a lot more, so that divide between work and home is further sort of muddied. And so having a defined, like, right, 5 o'clock, the work laptop goes away, I leave the study, I'm now not in work mode, you will leave that, you know, you get an email and you think, nope, that's for 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And then maybe you're in a better mindset to deal with that in the morning than you would be at the end of a long work day.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. I mean, the thing about phishing that everyone should be aware of is that any non-genuine email will always have indicators in it that it's fake. And it's really just a matter of people looking a bit harder. And that's what we're saying, you know, park it till tomorrow. If the voicemail email comes in at 11 o'clock at night, park it until 9 o'clock in the morning. And at that point, never mind your brain being possibly a bit clear, you can always go and ask somebody
send it on for a second opinion.
Yes. So, you know, things like looking at the sender address very carefully, and if it's a mobile device you're on, look at it even more carefully, because they hide the actual address. So it's very, very easy for the bad guys to spoof an email that's being viewed on a mobile device. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the way they operate is they make simple changes to a genuine email address, like, for example, qub-ac.uk, or if it's coming from Microsoft, ms-office-3fs.com, things like that, you know, a quick glance.
Easy overlook.
Yeah. And then the other thing about them, they'll always have a link in them enticing you to click it. And I always say to people, hover over the link and have a good long hard look at it and see I mean, it'll be pretty obvious very quickly. If it says qub.ac.uk in the link, then yes, that's where it came from.
Yeah.
But only qub.ac.uk, no other variation of that. Anything else is not genuine. Mm-hmm. Another big thing we've done recently is we've introduced the external sender warning message.
Yeah.
Into emails coming from outside our email system. It hasn't gone down very well with some people, but you know, we're seeing it, especially now that we're all working from home, we're seeing it as being increasingly more useful for people to identify the fake help desk emails and any email coming in that's pretending to be from an internal sender. So that's the first thing that people should really look at and think, why is this coming external if it's supposedly from my employer? And I think it's worth saying then outside of work, organizations like banks, financial institutions, they should never send you an email with a link to log into your account. And if they do, I would suggest you just change your bank.
Yeah, you can always go and log in yourself by going to the web page independently. You don't need to follow a link to do something if there's an action pending.
That's exactly what you should do with any of these, even if it is genuine. I don't click on any links. I mean, I don't bank with anyone that sends me out emails with links to log in. But even that aside, I still will go to the bank address itself. And even an RWE thing there, just as an aside, you know, never Google for anything like a bank and then take whatever the Google suggests to you, because that's a guaranteed way of some fraudster putting in a fake link to that bank. So it's better just to type it in yourself into the URL itself. So really just to sort of sum up on the phishing side of things, you know, the bottom line is if it's unsolicited, has a click here link in it and expects you to take some sort of action, that's when you really need to start thinking long and hard before you respond to it.
Yeah.
And as I said, you know, wait till the morning and ask a colleague or seek advice from IT. But really, in my experience now of many years of looking at this kind of stuff, I'd say that about 99% of this type of communication requires only one response, and that's hit the delete button.
Spam, get rid of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've talked about some different kinds of technology that we use within the university, like VPNs, but video conferencing is another one that we're using an awful lot. I mean, this conversation we're having right now is being recorded over Microsoft Teams, as have a lot of the other episodes in the podcast. Obviously, people using a lot more video conferencing because we can't meet in person, but that in itself opens up a lot more issues around bandwidth, data, security. You know, what kind of challenges are around using a lot more video conferencing tools?
It's incredible the use of video conferencing at Queen's. We were discussing the other day where, as you know, the corporate Microsoft Teams, and we're using that here at the moment. But currently we have about 30,000 people using Teams in Queen's on a regular basis. I believe around about 8,000 teams themselves within our Microsoft Teams, QUB Microsoft Teams. But I mean, the technical end of it is really handled by Microsoft. It's really nothing to do with Queen's at all. In fact, unless you're actually running through the corporate VPN, you're not actually touching, if you're working from home and talking to other people who are working from home, you're not actually touching the Queen's network at all.
Yeah.
So the traffic's all being managed by Microsoft. And I think in fairness to Microsoft, I'd have to say that they've done a very impressive job over the last month. Couple of months of,
yeah, because we're not the only ones.
Yeah, absolutely. But as I said, it's Teams is our corporate tool, and you know, we encourage people to use it as much as possible because, well, it comes within the bounds of GDPR, our GDPR agreement with Microsoft to start with. Whilst we don't host it ourselves, it's authenticated using our Active Directory authentication within the university, so that gives it an extra level of security.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that everyone can't use Teams. Sometimes it's not the tool that is available to people. And, you know, people quite often ask us what tool do we recommend, which tool is secure. The only one we actually recommend is Teams, but you know, there are other tools and we accept that. The likes of Zoom is a very popular one. And Zoom's taken a severe kicking in the media over the last few weeks. But if you must use Zoom, I mean, simple things like making sure that the meeting has a proper ID and a password. So the only people can join it are the people you share that ID and password with. It's really just simple things like that. And then with any online technology, no different than video conferencing, that you should never assure that you have total security, whatever tool you're using. And therefore, if there is any sensitive information to be discussed, that should be done very carefully and possibly shared by other secure means like password protected email documents. That sort of thing. But you mentioned the VPN as well, TJ. And I mean, the VPN technology, again, is another technology that has scaled up massively in the last few weeks. Queen's is actually providing that ourselves, although mainly through the Microsoft VPN technology. But again, protected using our AD credentials. So it is exclusively a Queen's technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the main security issues were with VPN or like email or anything else. It's protecting your login credentials, I suppose, as well. Yeah. Secure Wi-Fi. I guess none of us are sitting in cafes at the moment, but you know, it's probably not a really good idea to be using a corporate VPN connected through an insecure Wi-Fi. But as I say, that's probably not really relevant, particularly at the moment. But the other thing about that is about not allowing friends or family to use the corporate VPN. It's exclusively for QUB staff and students. And then one other point about VPNs that we've noticed recently from our monitoring of systems is we'd rather people didn't connect to a QUB VPN using a private VPN. Because what happens there is we see these very unusual IP addresses that are probably not coming from these islands. And the other thing is they tend to bounce all around the world, and that makes us very paranoid and very upset. So
it looks like some sort of action thriller where they're bouncing it off 12 satellites in 14 different countries or something.
Yeah, exactly. And we may well disconnect you, I'm afraid.
Well, fair enough. It's that fine line again. It's the balance between openness and connectedness, which I guess we're always trying to walk. This has been really, really interesting, really fascinating for me. I know a little bit about some of these technologies, but it's sort of peering behind the curtain and seeing some of this is scaled up internally. Some of this is scaled up by just using more teams. And you know, that's obviously offsite. That's Microsoft handles that. So it's interesting to see the divide on how we're using the technology and where we're using the technology. Because I think, as you said before, the biggest change was the speed of change. This all could happen over the course of years, or indeed it could happen over the course of about 3 weeks, which is what actually happened.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess if the coronavirus epidemic had happened 10 years ago, we would have a totally different approach to it. We certainly wouldn't be sitting chatting with each other as we have been the last half hour or so.
Yeah. And I suppose that's where the technology has given us a lot of opportunities, in that it is capable, it is able to handle what we're trying to do with it now. Whereas, as you say, 10 years ago, it probably wouldn't have been in the same kind of condition.
Indeed. It's a massive step forward, both in terms of communications capabilities and the security of them as well.
Mm-hmm. And so do you see any, you know, sort of big challenges going forward? Obviously, the way we're going to work has changed and will probably continue to be changed as we navigate this new normal. But are there any, you know, challenges or issues you see upcoming in the future?
I think the security challenge continues as normal. I mean, the bad guys will obviously try harder and harder to exploit the whole remote working scenario, but that's nothing different. I mean, in the 6 years I've been here, their tactics and their methods have evolved continually. So we're not, it's just hoping that we can keep one step ahead of them, or reduce the impact as much as we possibly can.
Listen, fantastic. This has been really, really interesting. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Absolute pleasure, TJ.
You've been listening to the Triple ECS podcast. You can find us on our website, www.qub.ac.uk/schools/EEECS. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at QUBEEECS. Triple ECS, inventing tomorrow, today.